Carvana's so easy, just a click, and we've got ourselves a car. See?
So many cars. That's a clicktastic inventory.
And check out the financing options. Payments to fit our budget. I mean, that's...
Clickonomics 101.
Delivery to our door?
Just a hop, skip, and a click away.
And bought.
No better feeling than when everything just... clicks. Buy your car today on...
Carvana.
Delivery fees may apply.
Hello and welcome to SEO 101 on WMR.fm, episode number 523. This is Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my co-host is my company senior SEO, Scott Vanak. We have a bit of a shorter show today. Lots to share, but it's a little lighter on the news. So we'll just talk really slow. It should work
out. Sounds good.
We crack ourselves up. Okay, so right into SEO news here. 44% of ChatGPT citations come from the first third of content. This is a study, and it's on Search Engine Land. It's a recent analysis by one of my favorites, Kevin Indig. He's always got great stuff he shares. So where ChatGPT pulls citations from? 44.2% are from the first 30% of page content, 31.1% is from the middle, 30 to 70% of content, and 24.7% are from the final 30% of page content. On the paragraph level, he found that 53% of citations come from the middle of the paragraphs. Citations reference the first few sentences slightly more than the last few sentences. The main takeaway here, there's a lot of data, is that front-loading your main topic closer to the top of your content performs best. Key insights should lean towards the middle of paragraphs. Now, just as a pause here, I would imagine it's, you know, we're doing so much analysis of what AI sees. And I would expect they're doing that because that's naturally how we write. Just guessing, but I'm not sure how much what we do will change. Now, it's not poo-pooing the great research he's done. It's always nice to have data, but it becomes a bit almost like navel gazing at a point. I'm not wondering how much of this we're actually getting value out of.
Yeah. Well, it does seem kind of logical. And I mean, this is something that we've talked about a lot is we refer to it as, you know, put your too long didn't read content at the tops where you summarize all your key points. Well, that it fits perfectly with this. That's, you know, like the core takeaway content that you want your users to see, put it at the start. You know, it's logical, but it's nice to see data that backs that up as well. We're not just making stuff up. It's actually, you know, it's truthful. Yeah.
There's some other traits that he found for highly cited content. Definitive language. Cited passages were nearly twice as likely to use clear definitions. Direct subject verb object statements outperform vague framing. Yes. This is Kevin for you. If you want really, really analytical information, read his stuff. It's fantastic. I love it. But yeah, it gets a little into the weeds. And in his defense, I mean, he's not really the ideal subject for SEO 101. He's more into the enterprise level SEO game. So that's why he gets into some of this really detailed stuff. But I still think it's fun to share. It's interesting. And you never know. You might get something out of this that you just never even considered before. Next is conversational Q&A structure. He found that cited content was two times more likely to include a question mark. 78.4% of citations tied to questions came from headings. AI often treats heading twos as prompts and the following paragraph as the answer. What's next here, Scott?
Yeah, so entity richness. So typical English text contains about 5 to 8% of proper nouns, and they found that heavily cited text averaged 20.6% of proper nouns, which is, I don't think I would have ever thought about that, but, you know, get your nouns in there, people. I don't know. A balanced sentiment. I thought it said sediment, but I don't think I did. A cited text cluster. Oh, geez. Blooper reel? No. The cited text clustered around a subjectivity score of 0.47. I'll explain that in a second here. Is neither dry fact nor emotional opinion. So a score of zero means that text is completely objective and factual, whereas a score of one is highly subjective and opinionated. So a score of 0.47 indicates that the text leans slightly more towards being objective, but does contain elements of personal interpretation or opinion, which kind of makes sense as well, because we do talk about, you know, putting in your personal experiences and your personal knowledge, and it plays to that perfectly. Well, but also, you don't want to be factual.
Yeah. It also, and we're talking about stuff that's cited, it's stuff that is content that is unique. Whereas if it was just dry fact, you could get that from a dictionary probably. They're trying to get this from real, you know, authorities. So it does make sense that there be some subjective personal interpretation or opinion put in there. So that's good. It's good to see.
Absolutely. And then this one kind of surprised me. It was a business grade clarity. So winning content averaged a Fleisch Kincaid grade level of 16, which is like college level, versus lower performing content that had a level of 19.1, which is like academic PhD level text. Shorter sentences, plain structure, beats out dense academic prose. Now, I would have thought a lower score would have been good, because everybody talks about, you know, even clients like, oh yeah, I try to write for a grade four level audience and, or whatever, like really low level, really dumb it down. So that everybody understands what you're saying. Like, who wants to just read huge words all day unless you're a lawyer? I mean, it's fine. We can read the big words, but you really want to, but I would have thought it would be a lower score than that.
I'm going to take this with a grain of salt. Well, I guess we should with most of this, but this particular one, puzzling to me. Heck, I write sometimes and I'm no wordsmith, and I end up getting schooled on it being too technical or too, you know, probably from the Fleisch Kincaid grade level would probably be 12 or whatever. And for some reason, that's too strong. So I don't know. This is suspicious to me. But then again, I guess it does want to take content from authorities, and authorities and subjects are generally, this is general, but highly educated, depending on the topic. So this, I wonder, it would depend on what he used for his research, what kind of topics. That would really have, you know, if there's anything scientific about it, obviously it would make sense for this data. Anyway, I'm thinking too much into it, I'm sure, but it makes me pause.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Anyone that's interested in this, so should definitely check out the article at Search Engine Land. It's in typical Kevin Indig style. You're going to want a coffee and maybe a cozy chair, because his stuff is long. And I'm not saying that as a bad thing, but it just is. It's very detailed and comprehensive. And, you know, you're not going to skim through it in 30 seconds and learn anything. It's a lot. So I tried to pull out the key takeaways here. So it's hard to talk about something that's so comprehensive.
Yeah. Okay. Four sites that recovered from Google's December 2025 core update. What they changed. So as it sounds, and this is from Marie Haynes, she discusses details about four sites that managed to recover from the Google's December core update and what they changed. So we have a little perspective on what may have worked. Now, what she's put together here is some pretty good data. You never know exactly which thing made the major change, but all of it is good, smart positioning. You know, you're not going to lose on any of this stuff. It's just good, smart updating. So we can trade off here. I'll start with site one, medical e-commerce site. In this case, the site improved their blog post quality to avoid generic content. They enhanced their page load times and optimized image use. They upgraded the FAQ sections on product pages to better address customer inquiries. Very, very smart. Developed comprehensive guides and improved product descriptions to clarify customer queries. Excellent. Increased details about the expertise of contributing authors. That's massive. We know how important EEAT is. So making that clear within your site makes good sense. Yep. Increased the number of medically knowledgeable authors contributing to the site. Yeah. Boosted customer reviews to reflect better customer service. And finally, focused on improving customer service is a key element influencing their recovery post-update. That is a lot. They worked their butt off. They deserve to get restored. That's impressive. I mean, who knows how much of it was done, but I mean, or to what level, I mean, but getting the feeling that it was done pretty darn comprehensively. All right, what's
I love that. Yeah, I love that a lot of this is stuff we recommend all the time. So it like makes me feel really good to see somebody else validating our own opinions and, well, and thoughts.
Yeah, and that's why when we have like I have sales calls often, and when I do, I talk about the stuff that would need to be done, and you know that we're kind of a partnership. We can't just get you the visibility unless you've got something worth seeing, and that has authority, that's earned the right to rank, and all the stuff we've mentioned time and time again in the show. But the ones who do it, they succeed. We've got clients that have been with us. I don't know. We've had clients that have been with us over 20 years, but I think probably the RV one I'm thinking of is what? It's probably been 12 years. I don't know. Anyway.
Oh. Well, they've come and gone because they did a bunch of consulting a few times before they became a regular client. So they... Yeah, we've known of them for, I don't know, a long time, very long time.
It could probably, it could be 15 years. Who knows? It's we're getting so old now. It's crazy. But yeah, it's they do so well is what I'm getting at. And they stick around because they are doing well. And why would you want to change? Why would you want to change SEO providers when things are working so well? Anyway, let's jump to site two here, Scott.
Yeah, so the second site was an affiliate marketing site that was selling high ticket items. So here are the things they did. They purchased and reviewed products personally, providing detailed photos and videos. Yes, please, like definitely do that. They added content created by experts with clear communication about their qualifications. They used AI to generate unique content ideas based on personal experiences. They utilized Microsoft Clarity to identify and rectify user frustrations on their website. They added interactive elements like quizzes to engage users. Mm-hmm. They regularly updated important posts to keep content fresh and relevant. And they improved Core Web Vitals scores and focused on reducing the largest contentful paint time. So I'm imagining that their scores were very bad if that's on this list. And actually, when it comes to Core Web Vitals, it's one of those funny things where it kind of doesn't matter as long as you're in the same ballpark as your competition. Really, like if your score is, unless your score is really bad, if your score is really bad, you need to improve it. But it reaches a point where, you know, you don't have to have a perfect score. You just need to have a good enough score in most cases, but definitely keep an eye on it. And if it's bad, address that. But
yeah, when I saw that this was an affiliate marketing site getting restored, that's impressive. I'm not, I mean, you'd have to have serious cojones and time and money to fix a site that's been dropped in affiliate marketing, because most people would just churn and burn it. It's just too much work. Huge props to whoever did this. Huge. Good for you. That's a tough market.
I think the big one is the first point where they talked about purchasing the products and doing proper video reviews with photos and all that. Nobody does that. Well, not nobody, but few of these companies do it, especially the affiliate sites. The affiliate sites, you know, they produce, I don't know what it's like today necessarily, but I remember I dove into it a little bit many, many years ago. I don't have a single affiliate site anymore, but and it's because of stuff like this, the work involved in performing well with these sites is
huge.
Craving the coffee flavor you love, but without the caffeine? Kachava's got you covered with their newest coffee flavor, This all-in-one nutrition shake delivers bold, authentic flavor crafted from premium decaffeinated Brazilian beans. Quality nutrition shouldn't be complicated. Just 2 scoops of Cachava's all-in-one nutrition shake and you've got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. Whether you're craving that coffee taste to kickstart your morning ritual or as a nutrient-packed reward to round out your afternoon, Cachava keeps you fueled and satisfied wherever your day takes you. Plus, it actually tastes delicious. No fillers, no nonsense. Just the good stuff your body craves. And for the times you feel like switching it up, you've got 7 flavors to choose from, all with the highest quality ingredients. Treat yourself to the flavor and nutrition your body craves. Go to cachava.com and use code FITNESS. New customers get 15% off their first order. That's KACHAVA.com, code FITNESS.
It's not a side hustle. It's going to be your full-time commitment, or you've got to be paying people to do stuff all the time. You can't do it after dinner for a couple hours a week. You know, you're not going to succeed.
No. Well, I think the second most powerful one was adding content created by experts with clear communication about their qualifications. I mean, those are signals. There's nothing but good things about that. That's textbook good. So that's great. Next one up is a very difficult market too. It's site 3 is an e-commerce site in your money or your life niche. That's YMYL, they call it, which is like the first niche to get absolutely hammered anytime there's any kind of algorithmic change. They're just on a, they sit on a fence or on the peak, like ready to fall off any which way the wind blows. It's just insanely difficult market. Of course, fairly good money in it too, if you can be good at it. So props to them. All right. So in this case, they improved their site navigation and hierarchical structure for better user experience. Modernized site aesthetics, including font and overall design for a more professional look. Enhanced the checkout process to reduce abandonment rates. This is an e-commerce site, to note that. Expanded the About Us page to better showcase the brand's history and expertise, and created content on timely topics to earn authoritative links and mentions. To me, that sounds like the main one, the one at the end. Timely topics, earning authoritative links and mentions. I mean, not to say the other stuff shouldn't have been done, but I bet that was more of the needle mover.
I'm curious about this one too, because a lot of what Marie talks about that they did is really geared towards user experience and site design. And, you know, I think we know that having a well-designed website can perform well and you want it to look good and be user-friendly, but I wouldn't have expected it to have enough of an impact to pull them out of, it's not really a penalty, but, you know, pull them out of being hit by an update like this. I would have thought that would have lesser impact, but maybe their site was really bad.
really bad.
I can't talk about it because I don't want to throw people under the bus, but I've seen some really bad sites lately that are straight out of the 90s. So maybe it was, you know, in that vein. I don't know.
My favorite is usually when we see those, we hear them say, "What, everyone says they love it."
Yeah. Oh, that's just like an old client we had like a million years ago, and they had animated GIFs all over the place and automated MIDI files that would be playing music, different music in every page, and the backgrounds were like loud and obnoxious and different on every page. And it was like for a very professional business. And it was like, and it did awesome. Like, okay.
You know what? That would be in now, probably. It's going to come all full circle, just like bell bottoms are coming back.
Oh my goodness. That would be so fun to build this website like that. It'd be like a flashback to our I don't know, high school days or something.
Oh, totally. Oh my God. That would be a ton of fun. Kind of tempted, actually.
Let's do it.
They'll have to bring front page back so we can use that too.
Oh, I've got a bunch of backup discs. I'm sure I've got a copy sitting somewhere in my closet.
We're talking about Microsoft FrontPage, which was a web builder that was, it was easy to use. I'll give it that. But boy, did it cause content. Oh, man, the code in it was just horrendous. Anyway.
I know I have a copy of Dreamweaver somewhere. That would
Me too.
Dreamweaver, it wasn't so bad. I mean, by today's standards, it probably sucks. But back then, it was pretty good.
I found my Photoshop 3 disc the other day.
Ooh.
Yeah.
3.
Wow. 3.
You run it on a Windows 3.1 machine. I don't know. Okay.
All right.
Move on to the next one, I guess.
Yeah. Common techniques across all.
What about site 4? Do we want to talk about site 4?
Oh, that's right. I skipped it. Sorry. You go for it.
You're just like, poor site 4. They're like listening. Talk about me now. And you're just going to. drop them. This is, yeah. There's a lot less on this one. This was a city guide website that is monetized using affiliate links and sponsorships. So it's kind of like an affiliate site, but not
kind of like your old site. Really.
I did have a site, like, it's gone now. And actually, whoever stole my site, they snagged up the domain and then they scraped the site off archive.org and put most of it back up. That's a whole other conversation about what I think about that. But it was similar. It was similar. I wish I knew this before. No
scruples.
No, none at all. Yeah. So this site incorporated videos filmed by their team to add authenticity. They use original photography to enhance content uniqueness. They detailed personal experiences with recommendations like best dishes and must visit spots. And they ensured content was continually updated and relevant. Content all comes down to content.
It all comes down to the one thing that Google's been telling us to do for years, make your content great.
Yep. not magic.
No. The common techniques across all four sites, improving content quality, what a shock, updating existing content, enhancing user experience, demonstrating expertise to build trust, and use of original media. Kind of anticlimactic.
It's so simple.
Yeah.
But yet few people seem to be doing it. And it's so frustrating when I tell some clients, these are the things, which is essentially this. You need to do this, or you need to pay us to do it. Those are your options, or pay somebody to do it.
Yeah.
And they don't want to pay anyone to do it, and they don't do it themselves. And then they wonder why something's not working. It's like, well, stuff has to get done that somebody has to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But
good times. All right. Well, if you were hurt by the core update, Marie suggests that technical SEO fixes and even building new links are unlikely to be your solution based on what we've seen there. That makes good sense. I mean, she suggests, consider whether your brand has trust issues, you know, a prolonged history of repeated customer service frustrations, fraud, or anything else that significantly impacts your reputation will seriously impact your ability to rank. This is especially true if you're writing on your money or your life topics. Look at how your content is structured. Improve headings, but important content should be near the top. Make it really easy for people to find the main content. She notes that sites that are often impacted tend to make users scroll through a lot of fluff or ads to get to the important bits. Oh my God, that just rings the bell for recipe sites, eh?
I was just going to interrupt you and say, recipe sites.
Oh, terrible. I don't want to ruin anyone's livelihood, but I'll look at a site, go skim through it, and like, okay, I really want to see this recipe. I will now drop it into Adblock browser because I'm so fed up with those ads. They're terrible.
You don't want the 600 word description of how it was Genghis Khan's favorite food and why?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah, but the crappy part though is I don't think these chefs making these recipe websites want to include all that crap.
No,
Google makes them do it, you know, and then they need the ads for revenue because they're not really, they don't necessarily have something to sell. Maybe some of them have cookbooks and things, but
you say Google makes them do it.
Well, to have all this extra content, if you just throw a recipe up, what's differentiating your recipe amongst all the other million recipes? So you need that backstory or something to set yourself apart. And
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I don't mind reading about the history if I want to, but I should be able to get the content quickly and usably, and then I'll bookmark it and I'll go back. I don't know how much value that adds, but it's something. Yeah, it's very frustrating. They're terrible, unfortunately. But I think they're just getting, like you said, pushed into a corner. It's the only way they can make money. And I don't think that's going to last. It's going to be a tough market to stay in.
Yes.
I think they're going to need something like Substack, a place that's strictly for recipe creators, where, you know, you can have your own place and they can block it to AI. I don't know. Or at least block a substantial portion of the content and just have the TLDR available or something, which, you know, frankly, that's got to come. We need that. It's not fair that it can just provide that much information, pretty much the whole thing. Anyway, I'm going to get off tangent. Okay, onto a tangent there. I don't need that. Lastly, ask yourself whether your content is mostly commodity content. This refers to content that's widely available in many spaces online. Now, we talked about that earlier. If you're not providing your professional experience and really adding value, it's commodity. It's nothing. It's easily made anywhere else, and you're not going to succeed so much with it. All right, it's going to be very much an uphill battle. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we have some local SEO news. Welcome back to SEO 101 on WMR.FM, hosted by myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company senior SEO, Scott Fanak. All right, what's here with the local SEO news? Oh, you're muted again.
I don't even remember clicking mute, but I'm back. So this is just a bit of a reminder to be careful when setting up a Google Business Profile. Barry Schwartz over at Search Engine Roundtable posted a report or reported on a LinkedIn post by Claudia Tomina. Sorry, Claudia, I don't know you, but I do now a little bit about this. And she talks about how you can sort of get in trouble with your setup if you're not careful. So first, we're going to list out some of the setup options that you've got and then her views on these. So during the setup, you will be asked what option best describes your business. The options provided by Google include my business has a physical location for customers like a restaurant or a shop. My business has a physical location but travels to work at customers' locations. So an example there could be a plumber or a photographer, electrician, that kind of thing. My business travels to meet customers without a staff physical location. So that could be a personal trainer, dog walker, things like that. My business is unstaffed and my business is an unstaffed facility where a transaction can take place and contact information for customer support is available. So that could include like an ATM or a electric charging station for a car, or I can't think of any other examples in the two that they give, but I'm sure there are others. Claudia broke it down as follows. So online only, if you select my business online only, you are effectively disqualifying yourself. So don't do that unless that's what you are, I suppose. We know online only businesses do not qualify for Google Business Profiles. I would imagine these are her words. I would imagine you get suspended if you submit this.
It's kind of trap. It's like they're just trying to sneak a trap in on there. On you. I don't know. Sneaky.
They are. It's like, you know, a little piece of cheese in that mousetrap was waiting. The hybrid model is like a business. My business has a physical location, but travels to work at customers' locations. This is sort of a classic service area business with a storefront. Her concern is that it could trigger a workflow that eventually suspends the profile or forces the address to be hidden if the documentation doesn't perfectly match the selection. One is a staffing requirement. This option specifies businesses that travel without a staffed physical location. Google guidelines state your business must be staffed to show the address. So choosing this may force your option into a hidden address, service area business type status.
And then, of course, makes sense. They're talking about personal trainers and dog walkers. I mean, they don't really need to have a Google Business Profile anyway.
Yeah, and directions don't make sense for that. But if you select that erroneously and or something, you don't realize it, you're in trouble. You got to be careful. And then the exceptions are like the ATMs and EV charging stations. They're the only cases where unstaffed entities get a pass on the physical presence rule. Parking lots. I bet that would be another example. Got one. Mm. Yes.
Awesome. Well, great. That's some good insights there. So be careful when you are setting up your Google Business Profile. If you're going to do it yourself, do remember that you need to do your homework first so you don't make any big mistakes that will get you in trouble. That's becoming increasingly easy to do. And don't always trust what AI tells you either.
No.
Oh, boy. That's a whole...
Isn't that the truth?
Ball of wax, man. Well, that's it. We've had a pretty good show. So on behalf of myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Fanak, thank you for joining us today. Have a great week, and remember to tune into future episodes, which air every week on WMR. www.ptr.fm.
Thank you for listening, everybody.